4. Jordan felt a little bad about stealing Declan Lynch's car. Not overwhelmingly bad. Not enough to keep her up nights, or rather mornings, since she was a night owl. Not enough that she wished she could go back and do it differently, just enough that sometimes she saw a Volvo of the same make and model and had a vague, niggling sensation of wrongness. The opposite of the Volvo brand. The opposite of the Jordan brand. Really, it was this. A few weeks before, she'd left the oldest and youngest Lynch brothers at a rural Virginian rest stop in the middle of the night, their faces lit up by the taillights as she drove their car away. Matthew, surprised, everything perfectly round, round face, round eyes, round mouth, looking, as ever, much younger than his 17 years, and Declan, unsurprised, arms crossed, mouth a straight line, eyes closing to form an "of course it's always something, isn't it?" expression just as he got too small to see in her rearview mirror. But it was a minor betrayal. Jordan had known Declan was resourceful enough to find another transportation method for the rest of the journey to the barns, and she'd also known the bad guys who tried to kill the brothers earlier weren't in close enough pursuit to put them in any danger in the interim.
Probably. That probably was what she felt a little bad about.
Gambling with other people's lives was usually more what the Hennessy half of Jordan Hennessy would do. Jordan was the more thoughtful half, usually. Declan Lynch was on her mind now, even though there was no Volvo in sight because of the party invite in her hands. Heavy cardstock, matte black with a bold white cross painted on it. Rounded edges that felt good to press your fingers against. Jordan Hennessy and Guest, you are invited. She knew it was a Boudica party. That was their logo, their colors, that painted blunt cross, that black and white. Boudica was a ladies-only crime syndicate that offered protection and marketing in exchange for what looked a lot like luxurious servitude. They'd tried previously to recruit both Jordan and Hennessy, thinking they were talking to a single entity, a pretty, high-class art forger. Neither were interested. Jordan already had enough limits on her movement. Hennessy didn't play well with others. But Boudica had coincidentally texted Jordan the night she, Declan, and Matthew had fled from the banks of the Potomac River. "Opportunity of interest for you in Boston, given circumstances. Please arrange in-person appointment for more information." And then she'd stolen the car to check it out. It was a sort of Hennessy thing to do. She felt, as noted, a little bad about it. But it was done now, and Jordan was by her lonesome, putting on her lipstick in a discolored bathroom mirror. The whole bathroom was a little unpleasant to look at in a way that turned right around to being pleasant in a shabby way. It was nestled in the corner of a generous space in Fenway Studios, a grand historical building constructed 100 years earlier to house nearly 50 artists. Old wood floors, 12-foot windows, 14-foot ceilings, vintage radiators slinking along the plaster walls like ribby animals, easels and supplies set up everywhere, speakers that didn't work with Jordan's new burner phone but did with the boombox she found in the closet. It was not meant to be a place to live, and it was entirely possible her couch surfing violated a city code, but The owner, an artist who blew up nude photographs and painted bigger, more colorful boobs on top of them, wasn't the type to be fussed about such things. It was only supposed to be until she found a roommate, anyway. How long did Jordan think she was going to get to do this for? As long as she could. Jordan put on her leather jacket and examined the look in the mirror. She didn't have a lot of choices. She had the clothing she'd fled in, this orange bodice she'd found in a very nice consignment shop in South Boston, and a T-shirt and joggers she'd bought because God knew if this guy came to work in the middle of the night to paint another one of his fucked-up nudes, she wanted to be clothed. And although she'd been doing a little forgery work here and there since arriving in the city, taking deposits, impressing tourists at the holiday fairs with some quick, cheap works, she'd been saving that money. For what? For the future. The future. A foreign concept. Back in D.C., she hadn't had a future. She and all the other girls had an expiration date set by Hennessy. When Hennessy died, it was game over for all of them. As dreams, they'd fall into permanent sleep without their dreamer. Until then, they all shared the same life, Hennessy's life, living as her and as each other. The girls shared this uncertainty every day. Would the dreaming kill Hennessy today? Would the drugs, the cars, the self-hatred? Would today be the day they fell asleep in the middle of the sidewalk? It hung over them every day. It was hard enough to put one's life in another's hands. It was even harder when those hands were as reckless as Hennessy's. Jordan tried to live life to the fullest. What else could she do? Not just wait. But in the end, the girls hadn't fallen asleep unexpectedly. They were killed. Violently. Unnecessarily. The moderators hadn't bothered to find out if any of them was the dreamer before taking them all out. They'd lived like Hennessy, and they died like she was supposed to. Outside, Jordan hugged her too thin jacket around her and put some speed to her feet. The party was in Back Bay, a 10 or 15 minute journey if she hoofed it. As she walked, she looked not at the glowing businesses on the ground floor, but rather up at the apartments and lofts above. No one in Boston seemed to care that you could see them in their offices and homes. They went about their business and expected you to go about yours. It became like a screensaver of activity. Jordan, like all the girls, was a city person, and Boston was a good city for Jordan's kind of art. And it felt good to be in a new place after being stranded for so long in D.C. trying to solve the escalating problem of Hennessy's dreaming. The other girls would have loved it, too. Poor June, Trinity, Brooklyn, Maddox. Poor Octavia, Jay, Alba, Farah. Poor girls who never got futures. Jordan owed it to them to live a life, since they never got a chance. She couldn't control Hennessy's recklessness or the moderator's ruthlessness, but she could control her own fearlessness. She was going to live as big a life as she could for as long as she could. She arrived at the party. Parties were like people. They came in lots of different shapes and sizes. They had different hopes and dreams and fears. Some of them were needy. Others were self-contained and only needed you to have a good time. Some were warm, garrulous. Others were chilly, exclusionary. Jordan could see at once that this party was a very grown-up party, a party that took itself seriously. See and be seen, etc. The venue was small. A an after-hours Back Bay art gallery, age knuckling the burnished floors, abstract paintings brightening the walls, provocative sculpture complicating the corners. It was all very nice. One felt smarter to see it. Cultured. The party-goers were beautiful. Women, all of them. Lovely, dark skin, beautiful blonde curls, freckles pebbled across cheekbones, big rounded hips, pale midriffs, golden shoulder blades, dresses and heels of every color and length and height. Jordan didn't recognize all of them, but she recognized enough to get the gist. CEOs, diplomats, the daughters of presidents and the mothers of drug barons, actresses, musicians, corn cereal heiresses and influencers made good, celebrities too, but you know, proper celebrities. They didn't point at each other and say, "Look, there's so-and-so." They acted cool, peerish. Boudicca. "What can I get you?" asked the bartender. She had outrageously red hair, ridiculously red hair poured from a bottle or a volcano. Immediately, Jordan's mind began to consider the challenge of how she would paint it. There were plenty of interesting red pigments, but she didn't think they'd do the trick on their own. Probably to achieve that eye-popping red, she'd surround it with a green background. Green added to red dulled it. Green painted beside red made both colors look more like themselves. Red and green were complementary colors on either side of the color wheel. Funny how opposites made each color look brighter. "What do you have that's cheap?" Jordan asked. The bartender looked up through her eyelashes. Her eyes were green. "Open bar for you." Jordan flashed a huge smile. "What do you have that's orange? Do you want sweet or sour?" "Oh, I'm not going to drink it. It's to match my top." The bartender did her best, and Jordan tipped her with some of her precious forgery money and then took her orange top and orange drink to mingle. Fake mingle. Really, she just wanted to information gather. Jordan had crashed enough parties to be good at this, but she was thrown by all the famous faces here. Were these members or clients or both? This felt higher stakes than it had in D.C., higher stakes, she reminded herself, but same game. She knew how to play it. It was just forgery, after all. Forgery of people rather than art. The key was to remember to be better than a mere copy or mimic. If one painted exactly what one saw, as accurately as possible, the result might be technically correct, but was also stilted, brittle. If one ran into a technical snag in its recreation, the whole process ground to a halt. One had to stick to the script. But with forgery, the surface details were less important than the rules that proved them. Every work of art had rules. Paint was allowed to pool in the corners. Lines were feathery at their ends as the brush was lifted. Mouths were exaggerated for drama. Blacks were unsaturated, so on, so forth, and if one learned enough of them, one could create endless new works based upon those rules and pass them off as creations by the original artist. Humans were the same. They had rules that proved their behavior. Discover the thesis, and you had them. Jordan used this principle to forge a partygoer who had been mingling. Her lips carried a held-over laugh from a funny conversation she'd just left. She let out an audible breath as she stole a quick look at her phone, as if she'd just grabbed a moment between chats to check her business email. She nodded over her shoulder as she walked from a group, subtly suggesting she had just had a good talk. When people tried to catch her eye, she lifted a finger and pointed to a group in another room, indicating, "Catch you in a bit, I'm on my way to a pre-existing condition." In this way, she existed in the party without being of it, gathering information instead of giving it away. Which was how she discovered that these were clients. She wasn't sure what they all thought they were here to purchase, but they were decidedly here with wallets at the ready. What could the spangled company all have in common with each other? What could they possibly have in common with her?
"Jordan Hennessy."
An older woman had drawn alongside her. She was far more dowdy than the other partygoers, dressed in a houndstooth dress with a hedgehog pin over her right breast. She had a glass of wine in her hand, and she was a little messy in the way people sometimes are when they're drunk, but Jordan could tell she was not drunk. She was just like that.
"Jordan Hennessy, it's been a GD long time."
Jordan peered at her, trying unsuccessfully to place her. She must have met Hennessy or one of the other girls. The woman's face turned cartoonishly worried.
"Oh, you don't remember me. Don't worry, I know some people around here get a little S-H-I-T-T-Y about these things, if you know what I mean. But not me. I'm Barbara Shutt."
She held out her hand to shake, and Jordan was running the scenarios, testing out replies that would work to make her seem reliable, like the real Jordan Hennessy, replies that didn't promise knowledge she didn't have, replies that didn't have trap doors with crocodiles underneath them. They shook. Barbara did that shake with just her fingers, and Jordan said, "Oh, right, D.C., yes?" Barbara wagged her finger at her.
"That's the one. I'm so glad, just so glad you could make it here when I'm sure you haven't even settled in. I'm sure Joe's already touched base with you to talk about apartment options. Joe? Joe Fisher?"
"Oh, no, I'd remember a Joe," Jordan said.
"Of course you would," Barbara replied. "Joe is that way. I'll make a note in the little old brain of Dex," she tapped the rim of her glass against her temple, "to have her add you to the schedule. Don't think we haven't been keeping a good eyeball out for you, though. That little adventure on the Potomac certainly made a lot of people sit up and take notice, didn't it?
And we just have been doing our best to make sure none of that notice gives you the time of day here." Now Jordan felt truly uncomfortable. Had Boudica been keeping menace from her doorstep? Or were they just saying it to pull her into the fold? She needed to say something. Something that kept Barbara from completely having the upper hand. Something Boudica couldn't know about. Think, Jordan. Jordan smiled broadly and took a risk. "It's nice to have Bride on our side, too, after all this time." Barbara's smile was fixed in concrete. Bingo. They didn't know a damn thing about Bride, either, except for his power.
"If you will excuse me," Barbara said, tapping a dainty silver watch on her wrist with the bottom of her wine glass, "I should get this rolling. I know you're looking forward to it. So glad you could make it. Don't forget about Joe. She'll be around."
The first time Jordan had been approached by Boudica, it had been a bit of a joke, a bit of a compliment. She and Hennessy and June had sniggered about it over a few drinks and a few tubes of paint in the way they might have snickered over bumbling, unwanted flirtation at a bar. Nice to be wanted, I reckon. As if, dream on. But it was a different feeling now that she was alone in Boston. She'd forgotten that there was a disadvantage to being not one of many Jordan Hennessys, but rather one of one. Vulnerability. Jordan stood there with her orange drink and her orange top, feeling misgiving pile upon misgiving, and then she discovered the music had stopped, and all the partygoers were moving generally toward the back of the building. They murmured and checked watches and eyed each other, and Jordan realized they must all be headed to the real reason for this party. Eventually, after they'd all pressed into a large room in the back, Barbara's voice came over the speaker. Jordan could hear her unamplified voice as well, so she had to be close, but she couldn't see her over the crowd.
"Thanks for coming," said Barbara. "We have a really splendid group here today. You're all really spiffy women. I know we're excited about the events coming up, and we're all excited about... where are my notes? Fisher, you do this."
A petite woman with very good posture and aggressively straightened brunette hair pressed past Jordan and through the crowd toward the front. She was dressed in a cocktail dress that said, "Look at me," and also said, "Now that you're looking, did you notice I think you're stupid?" It was a good dress. She did not say, "Excuse me."
Jordan just had a glimpse of her accepting a wired microphone. Then a voice that matched the cocktail dress came over the speakers. "Everyone here has a dependent in their lives. Some of you know one. Some of you are thinking of introducing one into your lives. Others have inherited one. And some of you are one."
Partygoers glanced around at each other.
Joe Fisher continued, "Boudica is proud to be able to offer a variety of sweet metals in different formats this year. As always, these are available by private arrangement. Demand is high, as sweet metals have been losing their efficacy faster than usual, and many of you are replacing empty ones this year. I trust everyone here's had an opportunity to see that the dependents we've brought in to demonstrate the sweet metals are genuine. Some have asked if these dependents are available. Not at this time. They are for demonstration."
For demonstration.
"Let's bring in a sweet metal." Barbara's voice rose unamplified. "Be nice now. Let everyone get a look."
To Jordan's surprise, people listened. The crowd reassembled, allowing her for the first time to see what they were all pressed close to. The centerpiece of the room was a kid. He was a lovely little thing, a boy of 3 or 4 years old, with fine dark hair, thick eyelashes, a thoughtless pout. He was presented sentimentally in a wing-back chair, which sat directly in the middle of the room. His chest rose and fell. No matter how loud the voices rose around him, he remained asleep. Scattered around him on the bright brocade fabric were a few other objects, some butterflies lying limp, a soft small rabbit stretched on its side, a pair of shoes. It was clear he was an exhibit, like the rest of the art.
"This is very exciting, isn't it?" Barbara said, still shouting without the microphone, sounding like a kindergarten teacher. "It's a really nice sweet metal, a very good one for your home. They're not always good for a living area, but this one is. How lucky are we all? Let's be quiet and look. Here it is."
A side door opened. Two women carried a large framed painting into the room. The subject wasn't very exciting, just a bucolic landscape dotted with sheep. But the art was nonetheless appealing in some way. It bothered Jordan, actually, that she couldn't pinpoint why she found it so appealing. She couldn't stop looking at it. She wanted to get closer, but the crowd and her dignity wouldn't allow it. She glanced at the other partygoers to see their reaction to the painting, but their gazes were all firmly focused on the wing-back chair in the middle of the room.
"Can I put my shoes on?"
It was a small, high voice. The boy had half sat up in the chair. With one useful hand, he rubbed his eyes, and with the other he reached for his shoes. He searched for a familiar face among the women looking at him.
"Mom, is it time for shoes?"
All around him, the previously still butterflies had taken flight. the little rabbit made a small thud as it jumped from the chair to the floor and made haste. The partygoers drew back to allow it to lope softly into their midst.
"Mum,"
said the boy.
As you can see, this particular sweet metal is effective for multiple dependents at a distance of several yards, Fisher said into the microphone. Please inquire for a full list.
Barbara made a sweeping gesture with her wine glass, and the attendants carried the painting back to the side door.
"Mum," said the boy again. "Oh, my shoe."
One of the shoes had fallen from the chair. The boy reached for it just as the door closed behind the attendants. The painting was gone. With a little sigh, the boy, too, fell from the chair to the floor beside it. The butterflies dropped from the air around him. One of the partygoers came forward long enough to lay the now sleeping rabbit back in its initial position on the chair. Jordan's heart was an elevator with snapped cables. Dreams. The dependents were dreams without dreamers. And the sweet metal, the painting that Jordan, a dream, had found strangely alluring, had temporarily woken them. Just like that, Jordan realized Boudica hadn't invited her here because they knew Jordan Hennessy was an art forger. They'd invited her here because they knew Jordan Hennessy was a dreamer. They'd invited her here because they knew Jordan Hennessy would have dreams she wanted to keep awake. The rules of the game had changed.